And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 114 of Fans of Power. I am Joe Amato, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Tyler T-Rex Baker. How's it going, T-Rex?
I don't know anymore.
That's it? Just the world was shut down on you? And things got kind of depressing in news, or what?
Oh, my life's fine.
Yeah? But the lives of others, millions of fans that could be anticipating something might not be that great? Is that what you're meaning? Possibly? Because I can get into that. First, I wanted to say hello to everyone in the chat room. We have JSP, David McMullen, Justin Hune, Jeff Prime. Let me put down a little more. I said David McMullen. Okay, I didn't want to get seen. And Ivan's here. So thank you, everyone, who's joining us. And we'll be trying to get to your comments and stuff during the show. We'll be doing a little back and forth, give shout-outs to some other people later in the show and some other things. But I had to start off with one thing in particular. Everybody, I'm sure by this time, possibly, that's watching us live or at least listening to us, knows that there was an image shown. And it's from David Goyer, who's working on the upcoming potential Masters of the Universe movie, if it still does go through and start production in April, if it happens. But David Goyer posts an image of him working on the upcoming Masters of the Universe film, and from the image he was shown, it said you can see in the first image him overlooking Teela's battle suit concept. Now, this picture, I mean, it started an uproar in the community, and it has a lot of people upset. And some people might want to say, hey, well, you can't judge a movie from one image, and hey, relax. Well, like I said, everybody's entitled to like something or not like something. But with this case, this isn't a good first impression for, we have been waiting years to see what could they do in a Masters of the Universe movie. And out of all things, you show Teela battlesuit concept. I mean, to go further, not saying, oh, we're always living in the past, but I mean, Jesus, we remember a warrior goddess Teela from the mini comics. Somebody that's badass, that has a sword, shield. She can have a cobra staff. She'd be kicking ass. Like, why would she want a battle suit or need a battle suit? And I'm sure some people, again, said, well, it might be for one part of the movie. I don't even care if it's for one part in the movie. I figure let this first movie be of characters that we can understand and see and what we've always known that made them great. Save it for a second or a third if you want to put them in some nonsense, in a sense, mech outfit. But this just doesn't give high hopes. It's like, do you know the feel? Do you know the essence of Masters of the Universe? This is the first thing you show us is this. So it's got people absolutely freaking out of the thought of what else is to come. Oh, and what else is to come? He also had, there was a spread of all these other potential, landscapes or vehicles or whatever it was. They didn't name drop any of them. But what is it with this dreary, desolate, lifeless looking planets that these people want to make for these movies? I feel like I'm looking at, one of those future movies where they show everything is always desert-like and, dreary skies and everything's gray. Where is the lush, colorful world of Eternia that we've seen in comics, seen in the cartoon, and even in some of the areas that are dark and forbidding and whatever? Those things also look colorful. It seems like they're trying to turn it, again, into a dreary, drab kind of futuristic, I don't know what. Like, how much more mech crap are we going to have? How much more of this robotics and technology are they going to focus on? Because Masters is a world of magic also, and barbarians, and fantasy. It's everything, all meshed together. But I feel like they're going to focus on just this nonsense of mech crap. Also, what else do we see? See, like I said, so the first impression, battlesuit Teela scares the hell out of everybody. We see tons of photos of all these concepts of vehicles in this crap background that looks just, like I said, desolate and garbage. Crap. What's the other thing we see is reference material sitting on the table in that picture? The amazing Thundercats He-Man crossover comic. Now, was that a hit with the fans? I mean, not only did the sales just keep dropping every single month and people were disliking it with each issue more and more, but I mean, that's the reference material that we need to see. Like, what are they looking for? Are they looking for concepts of drawings? Are they looking for horrible writing that was in that book? Like I said, the art was the only thing good in that comic, but still, what I mean is, What are you guys going after? Why is it sitting on your table? Why don't you have the Dark Horse books of all the mini comic collections sitting there to make us feel good? The Art of He-Man book, the Filmation one. Dark Horse is loaded with so much stuff. That should have been on your table for ideas to pull something from. But we see this. So what do we expect? Are we going to have, just like in that comic, you see Bionatops in like one of the issues of that Thundercats He-Man crossover. It's like, what the hell is Bionatops doing here when Bionatops is from Preternia? Why is Zodak in that comic there being treated as if he's just a regular, you know, heroic warrior soldier, when Zodak, as we know him from the comics, cartoon, whatever, is he has this presence like he is higher and almost like, I don't want to say godlike, but besides He-Man, when Zodak was ever called upon or appeared in the cartoon, or even when I seen him in comics then later, or anything that they try to portray, which wasn't much, but he's the cosmic enforcer. He's the one that keeps the balance. You feel like you're in the presence of somebody so great, and it's greater than most others. Even in MYP, you had the mystic enforcer. He might not have been the one that kept the balance throughout, you know, the universe, but he was the one that meditated in the mountains. And when it's time to call, and if you really need somebody to get in there and do something, here comes Zodak. But in that crazy Thundercats crossover, he's just a background character. So I'm concerned, you're looking at that crap. Are you going to put Zodak in there as a nobody? See, what I mean is, these are three big first impressions that are all just a kick in the nuts. And a lot of people want to say, well, again, this is for a new generation. I'm tired of hearing this for a new generation thing. This excuse makes me so sick. Who do you think has been buying and keeping this property alive, you know, buying the merchandise, buying the comics, buying Dark Horse books, anything you can think of? Who do you think has been doing that? It's been the 30, 40-year-olds that they always want to pick on, saying, oh, you need to grow up. You need to go ahead and, you know, let things go and let a new generation. No, we're the generation that's been starving for this. We're the ones you need to please. I'm not saying that a new generation isn't needed and, you know, it's not good to go after them. But what you have to do is you have to target us this time. Because if this movie fails, and it looks horrible, obviously, we're not going to like it, the new generation won't. But if you make a good movie that pleases us, then you possibly could bring in this new generation. But for them to say targeting just new who knows? They don't know nothing about this stuff. Do you see kids that are 10 years old to 20 going into the stores getting this? If you do, it's because we have our children, our nieces and nephews, our cousins, the younger generations that we might try to show stuff to. But the average young kids in their teens or 20s, they don't know nothing about Masters. They're too busy on their cell phones, their tablets, their video game systems to even know what the hell it is. So how are you targeting somebody that's not even an audience that knows anything about Masters? So that's what sickens me with that when I hear this. It's for a new generation. No, not for a new generation. For us. For once, please us. And people out there, speak up. Let your voices be heard. Some might like things like that. Go ahead if you like it. If you hate it, say it. Because the thing is, when you get your voice to be strong and heard, possibly they'll hear and they'll think, you know what? Maybe we should change this. But just don't sit back and, you know, back and accept it. Because I've even seen some people say, well, let the movie happen. If you don't like it, then, hey, you know, it was worth a shot. What does that mean? Why would I want to sit back and say, you know what, I hope they do a damn good job, and then it sucks. It's like, darn. No, you speak up, and you say something. Otherwise, they'll keep delivering this crap. So I rarely do rants, as people know, but I had to do this one because this one just had me ready to explode. These are all three things that I seen that he posted that give no positivity or a bright-looking outcome or future for what this movie could be if this is the kind of crap that they're focusing on. So, Tyler, I just had to get my rant out of the way. You can go into yours, but this is the stuff that I just can't stand more than anything, is stuff like this and who they say they might want to focus on in Target. So there, Joe's quick rant out of the way. Tyler, go ahead. Tyler. I can hear the screams. I hear the screams. It's overwhelming, man. It's overwhelming.
I'm disappointed that you weren't busting more balls.
Well, go ahead.
Just so people know, me and Joe talked earlier today, and Joe demanded that he be given uninterrupted time to vent what I could only imagine was going to be the most hardcore emotional breakdown about how passionate Joe is about making sure this movie doesn't turn into a steaming pile of dog shit. Joe.
Oh, just to let people know.
I dropped off and reveal this vicious beast.
I didn't want to curse. It's hard for me to do because I try to keep it cool for anybody that might be younger listening because it's hard for me.
Cussing thing. I was expecting you to be a lot more harsher. Man.
Well, like I said, when I get into a rant and if it goes into cursing, it gets worse. So I had to hold that back because I did not want to do this on the show of dropping anything. If I did, it would have went really hardcore, which I don't want to do on the show, especially with the younger viewers and listeners to the show. I try to keep it good, but I still gave out a very passionate of every single thing that they're doing that they shouldn't be doing.
I saw the DC versus Motu crossover on their table. Was there another picture that showed they're also referencing that abysmal, god awful Thundercat He-Man crossover too?
I thought that in the one panel, I mean, there was multiple pictures of the comics, and be that along with other stuff. But if I'm almost certain that was there,
one picture. But you know what? At this point, like, who cares? You know, the simple fact that they are using current DC books, which just shows you that David Goyer and the rest of the morons that are working on this film are too damn lazy to do some actual research. No, we'll just walk down the hallway at DC here and pull out the most current stuff they've thrown out and just, oh, okay, so this is He-Man. Skeletor in this big behemoth suit walking around like some, you know, monstrosity in the DC crossover. Oh, look, Skeletor killed the villain from Thundercats and drank his, you know, his body in a little goblet. And this is what we need. This will help me create this He-Man movie that's been lingering in limbo for almost 20 years now. And, you know, I the minute Joe posted this picture the other day, I didn't bother to really read people's feedback. Because I was like, there's no way in hell He-Man fans can get behind this ridiculous notion that Teela needs to be wearing an Avatar Exo Squad suit in a He-Man movie. You know, as if like, okay, the big epic finale, they all get their battle suits and they go ready into battle against Skeletor's Exo suits too. And, you know, we got to sell some toys with battle suits, you know.
Which those went over well in the 2000X line when they did that. And sure, they had a couple episodes in MYP when they did it. But like I said,
no one gave a damn about it.
Yeah, they hated them. They hated them.
Cared. You know, it's just the whole notion that these guys clearly are not doing research. They're too lazy to, you know, find out why this property is still hanging around in various forms, you know, since 1982, 81, 83, whatever the first year would be for certain people. This property's been around for so long and has been kept alive by people who are in their 30s and 40s and even older. Yes, I'm sure there are a few people in their 20s, you know, who are still, but it's been kept alive by adult fans who know this property inside and out. And I've been telling people, and it's just like, you know, do you people not understand? This movie is doomed from the beginning when it's in the hands of these idiots. You know, you to think that this is the first bit of pre-production that we've seen, that this is the direction they're going in. This is the research that these men have worked so hard at doing by just pulling out random comic books that were not well received at all, and that DC just decided to piss all over. You know, you just how the hell can anybody justify looking at it's one picture. You know what? I don't care if it's one picture. This is the direction they're going in. We're not seeing any concept drawings of, I mean, hell, there's been fan art on. You can just do a Google search for He-Man fan art and you will find stuff that, you know what? This is what we should have seen popping up on a laptop at Sony Studios or directed by David Goyer. No. We get this ridiculous idea that Teela's going to hop into a battle suit at some point in this new He-Man movie here, and we're going to see her in Man-at-Arms and probably Stratos in a battle suit too. You know, it just shows you that it's just going to be a big Avatar ridiculous. I don't know what they're going for, but it just, you know, I'm losing my train of thought here just simply because it breaks my heart, you know, that clearly we're not going to be getting a He-Man in the Masters of the Universe movie. We're going to get what these guys think, you know. I mean, come on, people. There cannot be a single man or woman who thinks that we're actually going to get a passable Masters of the Universe movie. And I don't care that all we've seen is one picture. That one picture tells you the kind of direction that they're going in. The images of the pre-production artwork that they've got some guy, which it's not the artist's fault. This is what he was told to draw. You know, it's the people in charge, David Goyer, and the people that put him in charge. You know, they're the ones to be at fault for this. And I just someone mentioned on Facebook earlier that, you know, the G.I. Joe movie, the characters were given silly battle outfits and stuff like that. They all look nothing, not even a smidget close resembling their toy/cartoon/comic book counterparts. There was nothing in that film that said this is G.I. Joe. And now He-Man is going to fall victim to that very exact same, you know, fate. It's doomed from the beginning. And I you know what? I will say this. If we continue to get anything close to what we've been shown already, I will not see this movie. I will not support it. I will not give it my money. I will hope that it bombs miserably. And you know what? It's just like, you know what? You're probably thinking, why would I want the He-Man movie to bomb? Because you know what? I don't want them to continue to keep making more He-Man movies if they're not going to treat it with the dignity and respect that all of us fans who've grown up with it, who have put our hard-earned money into the toys, the DVDs, VHS tapes, clothing, various types of memorabilia, customizing or getting original artwork, or buying, you know, Filmation images, you know, buying scripts, you know, trying to salvage and make sure that the history of this incredibly beloved toy line / cartoon or mythology is not dead and buried in the past, that everything is preserved for all us old fans and new fans to come and enjoy. I'm not going to support anybody that's going to take their best efforts and just destroy what I mean, it is the greatest, the biggest thing in my personal life. I mean, my biggest hobby is Masters of the Universe. And I will not fork over a dollar, not even a free ticket had it been given to me. I will not support this film if it continues to look anything like what we've been shown already. If they're going to continue to reference DC Comics, their current run of DC Comics, not the 3-issue miniseries from 1982, I'm not going to support it. And you know what? I don't care what fans have to say. Call me a non-fan or whatever, but I will not be showing my support for this abomination. It's not fair to Joe. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to people who run various websites and Facebook pages and, you know, who have done everything they could to keep this property alive. Everybody deserves the best He-Man movie possible, and we're not going to get it. Everybody listening to this episode right now, or 2 months from now, or a year from now, they all deserve the best He-Man movie possible, and we're not going to get it. And that's... I will stand by it. I swear to God, I will not see this movie. The trailers, I'm sure, will be silly and ridiculous, and I will, you know, I want to be wrong. I want to be wrong about a lot of stuff, but you know what? I have no faith in it. I've seen this happen in Hollywood way too many times with movies I was excited to see. And you just, like, you kept hoping, like with Ghost Rider, like, maybe, well, hope to God it won't be as bad as it looks. Sure enough, it was as bad as it was, so much I had to get up 40 minutes into the movie and leave.
Oh, speaking of that.
One example.
No, you're right. Speaking of that, with Ghost Rider, I mean, David Goyer, if I'm not mistaken, worked on that Spirit of Vengeance one. Yeah. And he had him pissing fire. Remember? Yes. Yeah, he's pissing fire. So, no, you're right. All the fans throughout the years who've created websites, blogs, Facebook pages, groups, everything you could think of to keep this alive. That's what I mean. These are the people that you should be targeting, because these are ones that obviously have been forking out the money to still buy all the merchandise and the classic figures, all the books, all the other things that you see. We're the ones that want this and deserve it. See, they try to modernize, as they say, new generation modernize a lot of films, you know, like you said, Transformers, G.I. Joe, any of these things. But you know what? They're always taking place on Earth, so it has a connection to where they think, oh, we better add cell phones, better add this and that. But you know what? Masters of the Universe is a fantasy world. This is not Earth, so it doesn't work for that. So if they try to do that kind of crap and do any modernization that connects us to kind of Earth to Eternia, they're doing the wrong thing. We've had it, like I said, in the past. You've seen everything that was done that is done right. Now all you do is now make a movie. You have all the reference of everything. Make the characters resemble at least like from what we know. But don't go all high tech and focus on everything like that, because I'm thinking that's what they're going to do, especially seeing on those slabs of tons of different vehicles in the dreary backgrounds. I'm just worried about the whole look of the movie. It's just everything frightens me about this. But that's why, again, if you guys don't like it, speak up, because hopefully, maybe by some mystical miracle, the people that are working on this movie will hear this and hear you and say, maybe we should change it.
Ghostbusters got the worst feedback, and Sony just said, you know, up yours, fans. We're doing what we want. We're going to make jokes about slime and vaginas and stuff like that, and we're going to release it anyway. The He-Man movie is dead on arrival. If they didn't listen to Ghostbusters fans, there's no way in hell they're going to listen to He-Man fans. You know, we might as well have duct tape over our mouths and our hands tied behind our back. You know, it's like they don't get it and they don't care. It's a property. Unfortunately, they've got their grimy mitts on, and they're going to just use it because they've got it, because they're desperate to try to make a franchise of something they got. So
it's a bleak.
They're not going to listen to us. We can write it all the hate mail we want, and they're going to find a way of dismissing the fans as if like we're a bunch of losers sitting in our parents' basements with nothing else better to do, sitting in our underwear, typing on desktop or iPads or whatever it is, because we have no lives, because we're typing about a movie based on a property from over 30 years ago back in the 80s. What a bunch of losers.
Yeah, the losers that keep it alive and, like I said, are buying all the stuff. So it's like I said, the potential, it looks very bleak, because like I said, the first impressions were horrible. So that is the quick rants we're doing on that, because obviously that was the most topical thing that they showed. So we wanted to cover that before we get into all the other stuff and some good stuff, you know, from the past and other things. But I did want to now acknowledge everybody else that has joined us in the chat room while we went on these crazy tirades. We got Jackie Miller, Captain Chronic. I think maybe Bro Cephas. Maybe that's how it is. I'm not sure, because, you know, I go by Joe Cephas sometimes. So I'll say Bro Cephas. Let me see who else. I just want to make sure I get everybody. I got David McMullen already. Hold on. I apologize for 1 second. V-Dub joined us. Thank you. V-Dub is a new listener. V-Dub Williams. This is somebody who contacted me on Facebook. I told him I gave him a shout out. So, he's joining us live. So, yeah, thank you for joining us. Also, we got 716 Straight Edge. He's joining us in the chat room. He said, Joe's fired up. And then Devil78 said, Joe was all riled up. Yeah, I guess I did. We're all getting riled up here. And I think I might have got... Oh, and Grimbot. Hey, Grimbot, thank you for joining us in the chat room. I got Jeff Prime earlier. So, yes, wanted to say hello. And Karsten D. Mute. Oh, I messed your name up. I'm sorry, man. And we got Jordell Fresh Breeze. Hey, how you doing, Jordell? So, everybody in the chat room, I hope I got all you guys. And I appreciate you joining us. So, that's the quick rants we did. And, I guess we'll go into some other things. First, I wanted to also tell everybody that the Super 7 did send out emails to everybody. They wanted to let everybody know that Club Grayskull Figures and Master Universe Classics Wave 1, they'll be arriving from China to Super 7 the second week of February, and they should be shipping their orders out by February 20th. So hopefully that all goes smoothly and you guys be getting all your figures. So, all right, well, that's pretty much the topical things. That's everything that we can think of from there, but Tyler, before we get into our other stuff, what did you want to start off with? You want to start off with discussing one of the great stories or a great character? And we got some other things too, but.
Oh, God. I just feel so depleted and drained emotionally right now.
I know, that's why you got to do something to pick up the spirits a little bit, because yeah, that was a punch in the stomach. That took all the wind out of us. But
I felt worse than I did before we started it. You know,
that's gonna be like, yeah, this is who we're talking about, and this is the character. Go all ahead.
Right. Give me a moment to compel myself here.
All right, well, why don't you compel yourself for a moment? I'm going to do this. Well, first I want to say happy birthday to Dan Rice. A belated happy birthday. It was his birthday a couple days ago, so hope you had a great one, man. And a quick little reference for something for maybe his children, you know, because everybody loves certain action figures and stuff. First, I want to show the amazing action feature of Snake Face. I mean, as a kid, that was freaking awesome. Who didn't love Snake Face? Came with weapons, too. You also had somebody like Flying Fist He-Man. Crazy weapons, cool little gimmick. There's that kind of stuff. You got Modulok. This guy's freaking awesome. Alex Rice, he knows about this character. So he's got weapons, can turn him into a thousand different characters. And then finally, let me get this one here. Hold on 1 second. We have Stratos. So that's it. Just want to show the amazing feature of Stratos for Philip Rice out there. It's probably the most fantastic action feature of any figure and a great design. So Philip Rice, you know, he's 9 years old. I want to give a shout out to him too. There's your Stratos. Isn't he amazing? So go ahead, Tyler. It's all up to you now.
Rice, boys, just let you know that Joe has got a severe major ass kicking coming to him. More sooner than he knows and a lot quicker than he'll be able to register.
Because Phillip's your dude.
Have enough to, you know, get me roused up to where I'm ready to start a riot myself here. Joe has got to come along here and poke fun at Stratos again.
I just had to do it. Last week, I got Phillip a little riled up. He was like, you know what? He was like, dang it. He was like, Tom's my favorite. He's like, Tom's my favorite now because I put down Stratos. So there's your great Stratos, the amazing action feature of that fantastic figure. But
what we clearly are realizing here is that even though Joe likes to slam the current generation for their handicap of constantly playing with cell phones and various other mobile devices and things like that, the quick fix of, oh my God, someone liked my Twitter. I got to tweet out again here about what kind of Frappuccino I had at Starbucks today. Joe is clearly saying that He-Man figures that have things you can play with, like gimmicks, much like cell phones, they hold his attention more than figures who don't have an action feature that rely you to use your brain and enhance your playtime with imagination. Because, well, clearly Joe doesn't have time to use brain power on imagination. He's got to work with, ooh, look at the snakes, they pop out. Oh man, so cute, guy. No. We can't play with Skeletor, the original Skeletor, because, oh, he just has a power punch, and his Havoc Staff has no actual magical powers that come out of it. That's not really fun to play with. I got to play with Terror Claw Skeletor, because I can twist his waist here, and it can keep my mind, you know, all fixated on something that, you know, doesn't require any kind of thought. That's what he's trying to say here. So just so you know, Joe is no better than the hipsters constantly playing with their mobile devices. You can't look up while they're crossing the road to stop texting LOL on Twitter or sending a picture of them with a silly cat rabbit face on Instagram or Snapchat or whatever the hell.
So Joe, Tyler's got your back, Philip. Tyler definitely's got your back. He does love Stratos, though.
That Joe's a moron. We've exposed him here live on YouTube, and it will be uploaded on iTunes and Podbean as well for people's enjoyment to see that Joe clearly just Joe's a lazy fan, a very lazy.
Yeah, I have to be dazzled with amazing gimmicks for these figures. It's
it's because of the vac metal, not just the basic He-Man, but the Power Punch, which is the figure we all fell in love with. No, Joe has to have glitter for the eyes. You know, he has to have. Shiny in his face, you know. You'll often find out that when I'm talking to Joe privately, he's playing with aluminum foil half the time.
Pretty much. I was looking for my weapon for Stratos, and then I just remembered he didn't come with one. So, whatever. All right.
You could always customize one, you know.
Yeah, I could give him the staff of Avion. So, yeah, but in the chat room, Nathan...
We are just in a really angry mood here on this...
No, we're not. I also want to say Nathan Kennedy is
so down and depressed. I'm like, God, all we did was be angry the whole time. I don't like
that was just the beginning. It was a beginning rant. We're good. Like I said, Nathan Kennedy joined us in the chat room, and he said, Tyler secretly hopes the new film turns out like Bay's Transformers. He said he know it. He said, I know he does.
Nate, so, hell up.
And also, Devil78 said he hated the original Shroud's figure, but saw him on the cartoon, and now his instant favorite, top five anyways. Jackie Miller said Shadows is one of favorite figures also. So, yeah, I had to get Phillip some crap. I had to mess with him, but also say, like, Alex
likes picking on children. You know,
I'm terrible.
Own size here.
Yeah, I picked that
child from another state. That, look, what kind of bullying is that there? Joe not only doesn't have the guts to face him, he's got to do it over the internet. Joe has to cyberbully a child in another state. You know,
yeah, exactly. I'm picking on a 9-year-old kid saying Straddle sucks, but
parts unknown / you know, aka Toledo, Ohio.
But I'm also saying that Alex, who's 6 years old, got great taste with Modulok, so good man. But well, Tyler, how about we get into a character discussion? One of your favorites, Blade. Let's do some talking about Blade. And we're not talking about Blade from Puppet Masters. We're not talking about Blade from the comics, Marvel Comics. We're talking about Blade from the Masters of the Universe 1987 movie. Go ahead.
We're talking about Wesley Snipes on this podcast. At least, not that there's anything wrong. I love Wesley Snipes. I love the movie Blade. But I wouldn't think that they're here to hear a discussion about the Marvel Blade.
Okay. Or the Puppet Master Blade. So go ahead.
That one too.
Yeah.
No, God, I feel like my spirits have just been killed here.
Yeah, that was just a hit.
We're talking about my top three favorite villains of all time, and I'm like, God, I don't have the energy enough to fart right now. You know, I'm just so. Oh, I'm like in a pit of despair right now. I'm like Wesley in The Princess Bride after he's had the killing machine used on him at 50 right now. Like, I just feel. You know, I need Miracle Max to bring me back to life right now. You know, for true love.
Go ahead,
for, right now. God. Okay. All right. Let's serenity now here. Okay. All right. Yes, Blade. Played by Anthony DeLongis. And for people who are not aware, we interviewed Anthony last July or June. June. It's in the archives. You can check out an interview with Anthony, the man who played Blade, who gave us lots of his own time to talk about his time on that film. If you want to hear that interview, go on Podbean, go to YouTube, look up our interview with Anthony DeLongis, a.k.a. Blade. It's a wonderful interview, so we'll probably kind of touch on some of the stuff that we heard in that as well. But my favorite villain from the movie as a kid and still to this day, well, Skeletor kind of took that a little bit more as I got older. But Blade is in my top three. I've always been fascinated by the character, by his look with the eye patch and his affinity for using swords and knives and things like that. He's got the dark gauntlet on his arm. Just really came off as somebody, you know, that you kind of see like, oh, you know, is almost like an equal to He-Man, so to speak. Obviously not in physical strength, but someone that can take on He-Man in a sword fight and it not be a quick one-off. You know, like you would see in various forms, He-Man would pick Beastman up and throw him against the rock, fight's over. This character, much like I've always envisioned Triclops, as someone that can go toe-to-toe with He-Man. And even though in the film we see that, you know, they go at it and He-Man does beat him, I mean, that's for the sake of the film. But you kind of feel like, just given the touch of their backstory that's mentioned, which Anthony said He-Man had taken his eye, I think most fans would kind of agree with that. Not with the classics bio, but naturally that their feud began over fighting before, and He-Man probably cut Blade's eye out during a sword fight.
They ever mentioned that in maybe a pre-production script? Did they ever say that was maybe going to be the definite...
No, that was just what Anthony had felt for the character. When it's in the script, I've waited a long time for this. He just took it as like, okay, I'm playing this out as if like this feud started really when He-Man took Blade's eye, which, you know, it kind of came to me naturally years later. I feel like, I wonder if that's how it happened. You know, just as a fun fan thinking, you know, this, you know, And so it's really cool. I'm sure a lot of fans kind of felt that way as well. And unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of backstory given to that. I hope to one day be able to write that particular backstory myself for the mini comics with Karsten.
That'd be
just
cool.
As an idea to do, to kind of flesh out the backstory of that character. But, Joe, I feel like I'm rambling too much. You go ahead.
Okay. Well, beyond the movie, we also had him in, you know, the Star Marvel comic where they had the movie comic. Now, in that, was that the one where he was depicted mute, or was it in the Cosmic Key mini comic? Because remember, he was depicted as being mute in one of those.
Movie comic. He spoke in the Star Comics issue number 9, and he also spoke in the Cosmic Key mini comic.
Okay, so it was just the movie comic, the Star Marvel movie comic he didn't speak.
Yeah, which if you look at the prototype, clearly the figure had a mouthpiece over his mouth and was going to be depicted probably as a mute character. You know, I mean, even William Stout's production art designs him with the mouthpiece. So it's kind of hard to say, you know, maybe if we could get William Stout back on here for that third interview we'd always hope to get, we could pick his brain as to, like, the design of Blade with the mouthpiece. Which would have been an interesting take. However, you know, Anthony was such a great actor in the film, still is, that he gave Blade a lot more malice, being able to talk and have that sinister smile on his face so many times throughout the film.
But also, remember when we had him on, remember he was speaking about, like, just times a certain smile, a certain smirk, a look, like you can convey so much emotion by just a look. And I think I brought it to him, was like, hey, did you know that he was actually mute in, you know, the one comic? What would you have thought of that? Because isn't it weird that he almost got a kick out of sometimes not even saying something but having a facial expression? And of course, his, you know, fighting style, you know, his actions speak louder than words, obviously. But that would have been interesting. Do you think that would have been good for in the movie, or wouldn't have worked? Because he had so many classic lines, you know, like you said, he said to He-Man, but do you think him being mute in the movie, do you think that would have went off well, or would have been different?
No, because Sauron and Beastman didn't talk either. So you really needed another guy that was, you know, vocal other than Karg. So
yeah,
it made sense. That may have been one of the reasons why they decided to, you know, can that idea or change it, you know, in the production or pre-production. Because obviously when they brought Anthony on, there's no mention to him of, like, this character's going to be mute. You'll be wearing a mouthpiece. So that idea must have gone pretty early on. And we can kind of come up with a bunch of ideas as to why that never came to fruition. But I think even had they suggested that to Anthony, no, you needed another guy that could speak amongst the evil warriors. If Sauron is depicted in the mini comics and other various media is speaking, well, we don't get that in the movie. And honestly, I like the idea of Sauron being a mute. I like the idea of Beastman being a mute, someone who's just a beast. I mean, that's it. I really didn't need to see Beastman talking and saying, someday you won't order me around anymore, Skeletor. Like, no, I it made him more ferocious because he didn't talk. And the same thing with Sauron. Now, Blade, Anthony depicted him, even though he said not cocky, but confident. And a confident character needs to be able to talk. He needs to be able to convey why he's so confident. And just his mannerisms with the swords, his precision, you know, it adds so much to this character that these are all, you know, mercenary / evil warriors. And in the movie, you know, you're led to believe that if you fail Skeletor, he kills you. So you almost feel like that these guys have been successful on all of their missions for the most part, and that maybe the fight between He-Man and Blade was a separate mission, a separate battle. It could have been even a grudge match, so to speak, that he has been hearing about this feared legendary warrior called He-Man. He's great, you know, with a sword. He's, you know, he's unstoppable. No one can beat him, not even Skeletor. And Blade, who's the master of swords, decides to challenge him, you know, maybe in a some sort of, you know, duel of some kind, you know, and draws He-Man out just so we can, you know, see how good this you know, mythical warrior is. He's got one sword. I'm good with two and one. I'm great with knives. I am just a master of cutlery. And what's that?
No, that's what worked great for him. I mean, like you said, having him speak because others didn't, but having a character that He-Man could actually go toe-to-toe with, you know, not being the Centurion guards or any of the soldiers that were disposable, you know, in a way, kind of like robots, if you'd want to say, you know, just they basically got knocked off easily. He's not engaging in a sword battle with obviously Beastman or Karg or Solrod. So giving Blade a new character, somebody that, like you said, has two swords, but actually can go toe to toe with He-Man, since he's not going to be doing in that movie the crazy lifting up a mountain or something insane to throw people. So he has to have a worthy opponent. And for, like you said, for him to say he's waited a long time for this, it's basically, like you said, a rematch. So I like seeing that character, which some people even chat room said, but a lot of people thought, felt like it could have been a Triclops kind of character in a way, like felt like it could have been him. But that's what I liked. I like that we had a human character and somebody that can take it to He-Man and go toe-to-toe and make for a great fight when you can't see much other things going on with what He-Man could do in the movie at the time. He was a perfect character to create. Whether they were going to use Triclops or not, Blade was perfect for that because, you know.
Well, see, that's why, and I had this idea for the mini-comic as well, is that Triclops is a bounty hunter as well, but he's also a bounty hunter, evil warrior that if you follow a certain backstory for Triclops, has a code of honor. Jitsu is a master of the martial arts. You know, obviously he's very good with the samurai sword. Blade is the master of swords. That is all he knows. He's not in hand-to-hand combat. He is strictly a knife fighter, a sword fighter. Broadsword, probably various swords that he's probably very skilled with, but the two that he carries are probably his favorites there. So you feel like, you know, if Beastman is master of the beast, I mean, that's what he's good at. Not only is he a brute, but he can control, you know, any sort of, you know, animal and maybe even dragons to a certain extent. We could dig up that old Vietnam again. But that's what makes Blade separate, is that he's good with all kinds of sharp weapon or sharp edged weapons. Like, that's his specialty. Jitsu, martial arts, Triclops, you know, he's a tracker, you know, he's a very extremely skilled swordsman. I like the idea of Triclops, you know, being a very cunning bounty hunter, but also a sense of honor with him, so to speak. And yeah, from the mini comics, if people don't know what I'm talking about, but with Blade, I look at him as someone who's a cutthroat, a guy who follows no code of honor, who has no sense of dignity or like respect towards others. Doesn't matter what he's got to do or how he's got to do it to get this job done, because he enjoys what he's doing. He can do it with precision and perfection. But if he's you know, going to kind of be what's the right word? I guess unfair, so to speak. Like I could see him. Well, no, I take that back, because I also picture Blade as someone who enjoys a great challenge and he wants to beat someone at their best simply because he knows he's the best, you know, just is like another notch on the wall, another tally mark, you know, but he just comes off as someone who's very intimidating. Like when he's interrogating Kevin in the movie with Evil Inn, he pulls out his knife and threatens him with it. Like, clearly, you know, Kevin can't do anything, but he would not. I swear he wouldn't hesitate to start carving away at Kevin. This guy's got no weapon at all, but he would enjoy doing it if Evil Inn had not stopped him. And instead, he decides to slam the knife next to his head, which, for people who don't know, he did that as a surprise to Robert Duncan McNeil. That was the one shot they did. He says that in our interview. He did that just to scare the hell out
That's
of him.
Great. That is great.
So go back and listen to the interview that me and Joe got with him. But yeah, that's just, I see Blade is He-Man's equal when it comes to sword fighting. You know, someone that could, you know, I'd like to think that outside the movie, they really could go on for a long time sword fighting, much like with Triclops and Jitsu as well. They were also very skilled with swords, but I almost feel like that is Blade's sole trade. You know, Jitsu could go hand-to-hand with anybody also skilled with a samurai sword. However, he only has one hand. Blade's got two. You know, and even though his eyesight's limited, you know, you feel like he's just as skilled with one eye, you know, with one sword, two swords, with his wrist gauntlet, knives, you know. Probably one hell of an interrogator as well, you know, someone who really.
Oh, no, I was going to say one thing. First, I want to let everybody know in the chat room, if it ever seems like I try to talk over to Tyler or vice versa, there's a slight delay. Like when he talks, there's a slight delay and glitch. So that's why we're not cutting each other off when we're talking. It's just we have a delay with each other. So that's what might be causing that, in case everybody's wondering what it sounds like that. I want to acknowledge one thing. Jeff Prime in the chat room, he thought Beastman, it wasn't Beastman, it was Karg, but he thought Beastman, he said he had one good line, get her. No, that was Karg. Karg is the one that said, get her, when they were in the gymnasium.
Yeah.
He thought Beastman spoke. But
no,
Beastman
growls in the movie. That he doesn't utter a single word in the movie.
Yeah. All right. And I also wanted to say welcome to the chat room, Peter Lane, and also Simon Rupsey. So well, thank you both for joining us. But no. Yeah, what works great about Blade, especially in the movie, is like we said, the fighting. The reason it works perfect in the movie is if this was a character that was in the cartoon, as you know, like in the Filmation cartoon, He-Man basically used his sword, deflecting blasts, cracking open, you know, the rocks and doing what he had to do with that. But he's not going to usually engage too much. Not saying he didn't, because he did with Skeletor, I think, with like a sword fight. But you wouldn't see He-Man too often engaging in a sword fight because obviously within the cartoon, it's what I said earlier. It comes to his strength. He's basically going to grab somebody, throw him across the mountain. You know what I mean? Showing his super strength. So that's why in this movie with He-Man not showing that kind, except towards the end when he pushes over a giant statue, but that's why it worked better for Blade in the movie. You got to see Blade as a swordsman have his time to shine. Because if you know what I mean, if he would have been in the cartoon, we would have never got that. You would have never seen Blade with two swords going nuts with He-Man. It just wouldn't have happened. That's why I just love that a new character was introduced to the movie. And obviously with He-Man's strength being toned down, we got to see a great fight.
Well, yeah, and plus it's something that, you know, you'd like to see He-Man do. You see it very, very rarely, even in the mini comics, He-Man clashing swords with another villain. I mean, you had your moments here and there, but just didn't happen a whole lot. And so many characters have got swords, you know, Triclops and Jitsu, Skeletor, they've all got, you know, swords. And it was great to see He-Man, you know, actually have a sword fight, you know, not just using punching and picking people up and throwing, which I love seeing that too. But it's also great to see how skilled a swordsman the He-Man is. And
no, definitely.
I think Blade, you know, I guess what's really cool too is that regardless of what people say about the movie, you know, I think Blade is universally loved and liked a lot, much like Frank Langella's Skeletor. Like, he's a character that people won't hesitate to say, no, I like Blade. I mean, how can you not? What you want about, you know, oh, Beastman looked like Grizzlord, or, you know, and El Dolph, he didn't look like him, and he was skinny, and this and that, and whatever. But, and I reject all those ideas and theories about that movie. People know that by now. But Blade, it's like I've yet to see anybody find a negative thing to say about Blade. And I still don't think it would have been a Triclops character because, you know, you've got, you know, a wide variety of characters that may be kind of similar in trait. I mean, why not say that Triclops and Jitsu are the same? They both have a sword, you know, but... You know, and they are both swordsmen. I mean, that is part of what they are. But I think, you know, why would you limit yourself to, you know, just two guys with swords? Why not have three guys? One guy, you know, and they're so different, though. They are extremely different. That's why I don't feel like, no, there's no connection to Triclops. What, because he has got one eye? Triclops has got three eyes. You know, Triclops has one sword, Blade has two. You know, and Triclops is not a master of the swords. He is a, you know, he's a tracker. He's a bounty hunter. He's got various types of vision. And I don't adhere to he fires blasts from his visor. I've always liked the idea that he's got gamma vision, distant vision, and night vision. You know, that's what made it cool. That's what made him such a cool character, because this guy could track people down and use his various vision to find his prey. You know, and then take them out with the sword, you know, is a way of, like, capturing them. Much like Buzz Off and Stratos, regardless of what Joe says about Stratos. Mechanek and Extendar. You've got characters that are similar, but to me, they're too different that, you know, you can't justify saying, well, we've already got a guy that flies. we've already got a guy that stretches his neck. I'm like, we've had that discussion before. I'm like, no, they're too different. This world is too vast for you to sit there and say there's only one flying guy, only one guy who has a sword, you know, only one guy that's strong. You know, you're limiting yourself too much. And that's what makes this property so great. And one of the many things that Sony will never get is that it's a vast mythology of heroes and villains, you know, monsters and humanoids and humans and, you know, men and women. I mean, that do all kinds of things. They're all strong people. Men and women, they're all
strong. Plenty of history. Yeah, no need to be going creating crazy new stuff when there's so much history laid before you. Quickly. Wanted to say welcome to Kimmy Craft in the chat room. Said, new subscriber, love the channel. Watched a few shows this morning at 4 a.m. Couldn't sleep, so thanks for joining us. And also Adam Gabbard. So thank you for joining us. But I did want to bring up another thing, since we pretty much, you know, talked all about Blade, which he is a fantastic character, and I usually never heard anything negative about him. But speaking of, not just talking about how we talk about the upcoming movie, if it happens, but how we're speaking of Blade from the 87 movie, Samuel Murdoch did something that I thought you'd get a pretty good kick out of. It's at the North Park, I think, what did he say? He said, went and saw the 1987 Masters of the Universe movie at the Retro Theater by his house and had a great time. He said he also got a print picture for $4 that, you know, he got there. But he went and seen the Masters of the Universe 87 movie at the theater. He said there was like maybe about 50 people in the theater. It's, you know, kind of like, you know, not a super giant one, but it's a retro theater. I was like, wow, I was like, oh, Samuel. I was like, I got to bring that up. That's the coolest thing. And I think he said that's his first time that he's seen it in theater, because as a kid, I think he said he didn't get a chance to see it. So how awesome was that? He went to the movies and he seen the 87 Masters of the Universe movie.
I hope to God that's one of the things I hope to God I don't, my life does not end before I get to see that on the silver screen at some point. I mean, I don't know how every time they do a screening, it's in, you know, John Atkin will do it in California or someone will do it in Canada, you know, probably John Atkin there too. You know, it just seems like, God, I would just love to see it one time on the silver screen just to see what it would be like to see the Master of the Universe logo flash onto the to see the lineup of the evil warriors when they're doing the roll call, to see Skeletor give his God speech on the screen. Oh, God,
yeah.
And Joe went and saw it. Said the movie was stupid. It weren't the characters on the contest.
Here we go. He's ready to go ahead and kick me in the balls. Because as a kid, yeah, when I first seen it at the theater, I remember I was upset back then. And I loved the toys of, you know, based off the movie. But I remember seeing that movie, I was like, oh man, that was just so weird. So I had a grudge. But then as years went by and I seen it more and more, I was like, you know what, that damn movie was, it was good. I mean, it really gets, it doesn't get the respect it deserves. I think the more people see it, the more they can understand, especially understanding, as we said before, the limitations, budget, everything that they had back then. But I think for those who maybe haven't seen the movie that are listening to us now, if you're like, you know, I haven't seen that 87 movie since it came out, honestly, you watch it again, it's a damn good movie. And Samuel, I wish I could see it in the theater again, because it's a retro theater in Delaware, I think he said, called the North Park one. But what's cool is on the header, you know, of the outside marquee, it's advertising on the marquee. It's advertising a new Margot Robbie movie called I, Tonya, and then right underneath it, Masters of the Universe. So those are the only two movies on the big marquee. It's kind of cool that with a new movie, there's the retro.
Man.
So yeah, he experienced something pretty cool that I don't know how many other people do it, but that's Blade. Now, before we get into our final topic, where we'll cover a really good book, and we're not reading the whole book, we're just covering it, so it wouldn't be super dragged out, obviously. I'm gonna do another version of Masters of the Universe Hangman for Tyler. This time I'm not gonna screw him over with some insane thing like Zubarex. I was like, Tyler, I'm going to be cool with you, man. And I'm going to give you one that everybody knows the person's name. So I'm holding up here the name of a character. And it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 letters. And this one is one that everybody could know. So if you give me a letter, I'll pop it in there. If not, we'll start Hangman.
E.
What was the letter?
E.
You know what's weird is that's when it went blank on the microphone for Tyler. I think he said M as in Michael. Is that what you said?
No! No, I said E.
Oh, E. Yep, there's an E. Okay, good.
It's like, no, did you say M, Tyler? No, I'm afraid there's no M in this. It just continues to like...
I was trying to read your lips.
...hear anything.
Okay, there is an E.
All right, R.
Oh, wow, you're on a damn roll. Well, I guess this wasn't as hard as I thought. Okay, there's an R.
Let's see. A.
No. I'll put a head there. Okay.
T.
No. I'll put a buddy.
L.
No. Put an arm.
C.
No. I'll put an arm. There you go.
M.
Nope. I'll put a leg. There you go.
Oh, jeez.
He's like, here we fucking go.
S.
Yes, there's an S. There you go.
Yuckers.
You got it. Some bitch, he got it. N-Y-U-K-K. Here it is for everybody to see. Yuckers. Good job, man. I was for sure. I was like, oh, man, he might miss it. See? One everybody knows. You got it, Tyler. Good job, man. Yuckers. That's Trio's right, little annoying brother.
Can you see it all right?
Yes, I can see it. It's two. Wait, how many? Oh, damn, the bottom of the screen's blocking a little. I'll say something again. Wait.
All right. Can you see it now?
Yeah. God, you got. That's four words.
Yes.
This is a person? I mean, a character? Or is this a place or what?
It's a Master of the Universe thing.
Oh, a thing? Oh, God. An N as in no.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
S?
Yes.
He didn't confirm it. I think I got a head, probably.
One S.
Oh, Jesus. An I?
No I.
Damn.
Joe's got head here.
Oh, God, I'm going to have to do another. Can I get an O? Oh, wait, what am I on? Wheel of Fortune? An O.
Yes. Can you see it?
Yes. Can I get an F? As in Fred.
Yes. One F.
The hell is that old word? You said this is a thing, huh?
It's related to the universe.
Oh my God, I can't believe I'm so blank.
You put no limitations on what we do this on, so this is Master of the Universe, but no, it is not a person.
Okay, no, you're right. Yeah, as long as I got the category.
What you need? I have to give you the category.
Oh yeah, we always give categories. So you said it's a thing, so at least I know it's a thing now.
Hogwash.
Yeah, we always like I let you know it was a character. And
this is and, the title of an episode.
Oh, title of an episode. Oh my god! It's see everybody in Filmation land is probably like kicking me in the ball, saying, "Joe, you should know this." I'll take a. Oh wait, did I say R? I don't think I said R, an R.
R.
Okay, I think I'm starting to get it in my head, but I just want to... why is that escaping me? Because you already know what I'm going to say next. Okay, give me a K. Can't I get this? Return of Orko's uncle. Return of Orko's uncle. Oh, God. Dang. I'm sorry it took so long, everybody. Jesus, how stupid am I? Okay, there we go. I was thinking of an item, you know, when you first did it. I was like, wait a second. Is this some kind of, like, disc? Is it Osmos? Is it Cosmos? I was just lost. But, okay, Ravy said, okay, good. That Orko's what saved me. If I didn't get Orko's part, I think I would have been lost for a while. So, okay, you got me. All right. Good job, Tyler. I got it. I mean, all right. Well, lastly, we're going to discuss a book that you don't hear people talk about too much, and that's He-Man Smells Trouble. So this is a book, like I said, we're not saying the entire story, because obviously if you haven't read it, you can read it yourself, or we'll just give little highlights of it. But in the story, you basically have Roboto trying to maybe help Orko at some point during this book. Things don't go like they should. The wall collapses. Roboto tries to protect Orko. He damages something. He feels worthless. At the same time, you have Stinkor in Snake Mountain, where Skeletor cannot stand his smell anymore, what he does, and he basically tells him to leave Snake Mountain. Through all this madness, how it started off, there's people that are in some kind of ship that are flying. You didn't know who they are at first, but then they're coming back to Eternia. And they're robots that were created from the past, but from people on Eternia. And the people that were supposed to have created them are long gone. But obviously the knowledge of that has been passed to other people like Man-at-Arms, because you find out that what was kind of different in this is, you know, like Man-at-Arms created Roboto. And he created him to where he could have, like, feelings. I mean, I know that, you know, obviously in the cartoon we know he gets a heart and stuff and has feelings, but... You find out that there's these other, like, not, you don't want to say a race, but other robots that resemble Roboto that are coming back with all the knowledge that they've been gathering throughout the universe, and they're coming home now. So I'll pass it to you, and then we can go back and forth with it. But I always found it cool that there was these other Roboto-looking characters. I mean, as a kid, I was so fascinated, thinking, oh, man, it'd be cool to have him. It'd be cool to have him. You know, they were similar, but obviously still different in their designs, you know, with number 8, 19, or whatever. But go ahead, Tyler.
This story was not as exciting to me when I finally got it, because I tried to get it as a kid, and my mom told me I couldn't get it, and told me I could get The River of Ruin, because apparently there was a discount sticker on that one, and there was no discount sticker on He-Man Smells Trouble, because I picked it deliberately because Stinkor and Roboto were on the cover, and I was, you know, denied that and got it. So I almost felt like there was this constant buildup to see what that story was, especially when you see the summary for it in the back of the Golden Books. So when I got it, I was kind of disappointed in it. Overall, the story, I just didn't think it was... not a horrible story, but I guess just because there was so much hype of like, oh my god, it's an awesome story with like Stinkor and Roboto, and like, what could that be about? So it just... you know, I didn't like Orko being portrayed as this kind of, you know, really angry, just very quick to fuss at Roboto. It just kind of seemed so out of character when I saw him. Like, it's kind of hard to picture Orko being snide with anybody, much less, you know, Roboto. Roboto, I just felt like that's the one of the last people in the world you would want to come at after. So that kind of was like, eh. And then I did think it was kind of interesting that the robots that were created, which I can only assume probably were like by the Yelverts maybe or something like that, they looked Votto. But he kind of felt like, you know, if Roboto had been kind of directly linked to them, that kind of thing, that would be one. I don't know. You kind of almost felt like maybe that was their intention, you know, to come up with this group of robots that are. But did I miss a detail in the book that you just said that that Man at Arms created Roboto and that he had been given knowledge of?
Well, it's like he's because Orko didn't think Roboto had feelings, and then Man at Arms explained, he's like, no, you know, like he's created, but they're a special type of robot that's created with feelings, and you wondered, huh? And then when you hear about the other ones, they explained about how they were created by the ones that were there but have passed away since then, and then you find out obviously Man at Arms, he got that knowledge somehow, however he got it. I can't remember how they explained it, but yes, so when they create these robots, they're created with, I guess you could say, feelings. And you're right, it seems like it was an interesting story, but I mean, obviously there's only so much they could do in the book, but it felt like it could have been explained a little more or been in depth. Like if this could have been a cartoon episode, it felt like it could have really been great, because it's like everything is rushed, obviously. They're only showing one picture per page, so they got to say so much to basically explain everything that's going on, even though you only see one picture. You hear stuff like, well, I didn't see that. Well, they can only put one thing, but yeah. It's like the knowledge of the universe that they're collecting in these like rods that they're going to put into this like what the hell you want to call it, spiral or whatever you want to call that thing. Skeletor eventually wants to get to, you know, find out of the knowledge of the universe, but it just seems so quick for Cinco. Figured I'd get this. He would act like he's a friend to Roboto, you know, in the story. Because like I said, I don't want to say everything so people can still read it themselves, but. He eventually wants to get it to Skeletor, and then maybe then with the knowledge, you know, obviously they could rule the universe, but it just felt too rushed. But I know that's what they did with most of these books. But I mean, just seeing the newer characters, you know, go ahead.
Well, I could forgive the kind of like, you know, they don't really have time to flesh out, but it's more kind of like of kind of linking Roboto and Stinkor together as being outcasts in their respective, you know, factions, so to speak. And of course, Stinkor uses this kind of situation to exploit it for his own purposes, whereas Roboto is kind of a naive, so to speak, to what's going on here, because otherwise we don't have a story. So I can understand in that kind of regard. It's kind of a I could buy this kind of setup, because you naturally think Stinkor and Mossman because of how it's set up in the mini comic, but I could also buy, you know, the whole outcast thing, which I kind of get tired of, like Stinkor is like always being portrayed as like this evil warrior that I'm like, as we've said before on our Stinkor episode, like, dude, he's one of the most powerful evil warriors. I mean, no one's going to be around him. The minute you send him running at the evil horde or the snake men, they're going to start gagging and throwing up or running the other direction. He's clearly never credited as being such a powerful evil warrior with chemical warfare that he has. But obviously that's how he's portrayed so much, is that no one wants him around because he stinks, but which is what they do again here. But I don't mind the idea of, this would have been cool in an episode, I think, yeah. Especially if Filmation, and I didn't like Filmation's take on Roboto. I didn't like the idea that he came from outer space. But it would have been cool to have Roboto kind of be cast out, so to speak, due to a misunderstanding, and Stinkor's cast out and uses Roboto's exploiting the feelings that Roboto has been given to, and kind of use it to his own advantage to further a plan to either show Skeletor that he's just as good as he is or deserves to be part of the Evil Warriors. Or for his own selfish, you know, desires, like most evil warriors have done at some point or another on their own. But
yeah, I mean, they both kind of want to show that they belong, Roboto and Stinkor. Yeah. That's what they're trying to show. I mean, they both feel like outcasts.
I like that idea. I kind of felt like the whole, like, robot race that was created, who were out seeking knowledge and all that stuff. I don't know. I kind of felt like that was... There's a little too much going on here. I really feel like the whole Roboto Stinkor thing should have been really pushed even further. you know, and not necessarily throw in this extra storyline of this other group of robots that are gathering information from around the universe or the galaxy and bringing it back.
Yeah, because beyond even the information, when that rod was put into the spiral, created a whole new city. But, you know, for people maybe never seen, you know, it's like I said, they got this number 9 character, and it's different. It's just different seeing kind of different versions, if you will, of the robots. And then there's like a big collage of them. And like I said, they look pretty similar and obviously designed to Roboto, but there's slight and subtle differences that made them kind of interesting to look at. One of the things that I found interesting was towards the beginning of this book is at one scene when you see Roboto shooting a blast of energy, he's not shooting it out of his gun attachment. He's shooting it out of his claw attachment. I found strange, even back then as a kid, I always found it strange that his claw was shooting the energy blast. But I guess you find out other special abilities, because what Orko was really mad about was when this hole at the beginning where the wall crumbled down and Roboto, you know, protected Orko to make sure he wasn't killed from the rocks crushing him. When He-Man finally started taking the rubble away and seeing that, Orko was upset because Roboto destroyed one of his favorite magic spell books. But at the end, another little twist for Roboto. Roboto shows that he has the ability, in some cases, to do his own magic that he's been studying. And he, like, summoned up a brand new magic spell book for Orko, which I thought that was weird. I was like, wow, you know, it's, you know, different robots using magic, learning the ability. So it was weird.
That's just them taking liberties with these characters. That's like having Beastman fire a blast from his hand. You know, it's doesn't make any sense, but they're just writing for kids. So they just kind of throw in kind of whatever. You know, so I don't buy that, but it's a children's story, but a lot of these children's stories can be pretty damn good. This one, but it's by far not the worst at by any means. I will say all the hardcover Golden books I think are all good. Not all of them are the best or great, but they're all not bad. Even though the artwork, like in the Horde, has got some not the prettiest artwork at times, but overall, I mean, I think all the hardcover books are all quite good, considering.
Yeah, they're interesting, and also you can see sometimes, like, the artists, they usually have their version, obviously, of how they draw Skeletor or any of the characters, but once in a while, like, there might be a... One thing looked Filmation-like. Like, it's still basically the artist and his interpretations of everything. Like, Man-at-Arms does not have the mustache, and Skeletor always had this... He's got a very kind of, like, gritty skull kind of face, but in one particular panel, Skeletor is portrayed on... I think he's on Rotan, and when they show him, at least in my opinion, I feel like they were trying to do Filmation-inspired Skeletor there with the you know, the side profile, that angular profile, it felt Filmation-like compared to the rest of the book when you're seeing Skeletor. I mean, he looks nothing like that. I mean, I can just get you one quick page so you can see basically what Skeletor is always looking like in the book. It's, you know, it's more this kind of, you know, thing look, if you can see that. So his face, it looked like it was inspired, like he was trying to do Filmation. And also in the chat room, I want to say hello to Adam Gabbert. He was saying he would have loved to seen, you know, he said if he had a time machine, he'd like to go back and tell Lou Scheimer to put Stinkor in a Filmation episode. It would have been cool, but they would have, like you said, it would probably ended up being a fart joke if they would have did anything.
Well, he rejected the idea, too. Like, Lou Scheimer said he wasn't interested in putting Stinkor. He just kind of was turned off by, which I'm like, I don't know why. You know, they weren't turned off by putting other characters. Like, why Stinkor? I don't know. It's plus Stinkor would have been coming along the same time as Spikor. And, you know, Spikor and Too Bad were not treated with any kind of dignity in the cartoon. So Stinkor probably could have been treated worse than Spikor. That's kind of hard to imagine. But I almost felt like, you know what? I think Stinkor was spared a very undesirable fate had he been put in Filmation's second season of He-Man, because, you know, Webstore and Cobra Khan were giving very, very good treatment. And for whatever reason, the was considered the third batch of episodes, which is the second half of the second season, which James Etaw will confirm was kind of broken up into three full seasons. but really there's only two seasons. So that's why you see certain episodes that have got 1985 wave of characters like Moss Man, Too Bad, Spike Orr, Cyclone, all Moduloc, all showing up. I think Stink Orr would have been probably been portrayed poorly with a bad voice, probably put in some, you know, really bad episode, you know, probably on par with like The Greatest Show on Eternity quality, you know, just not given what he should have been given, so to speak. I just feel like he would not have been given fair treatment, simply because they would have thought, oh, this character's silly, he stinks, he's a skunk character, we can't treat him with any kind of, you know, actual seriousness. There's nothing threatening about this character. But they take Spike Orr and make him the most insulting of Skeletor's evil warriors, you know.
Yes, so they made him way incompetent. I mean, they shouldn't even have put him in if that's how they were going to treat him. Yeah, Stinkor
and Filmation would have been phenomenal had he been done correctly. But all sure, of them sure. Would have been given.
Absolutely. I wanted to say one thing to Peter Lane in the chat room. He said that it's amazing how much Stinkor is still remembered amongst the general public, because he said Kevin Smith mentioned Stinkor on his Fat Man on Batman show the other day. So, oh, that's cool. I never usually hear Stinkor get name drops anywhere. So that's kind of cool. I don't think I ever watched Fat Man on Batman. Do you know what that is, Tyler? Is it a podcast? Is it a TV show? Peter Lane, what is that? I've never seen that. I think that's cool. Now I'm going to have to see it.
It's a podcast. At least I think he does like actual video feed as well. But I stopped listening to it because I got fed up with him and Ralph Garman slamming the 1989 Batman movie and all this stuff. I didn't quite agree with his take on Batman. So that pissed me off. I'm like, you know what? I don't think you're funny anymore, and I don't like your take on Batman at times. So I stopped listening to it.
I had no clue about it, but I'm going to have to check that out. Maybe I'll do some searching to find that, but thanks for letting us know that, Peter. But, we covered the book. Like I said, that is, it's a good read. I mean, it's not bad.
I had it hyped up for other reasons. So that's why with a lot of these, when you can't wait to see what Cyclone and Too Bad are going to be like in the cartoon, you finally get to see it and you're like, oh God, man, this is sad. A lot of for something that just doesn't live up to it.
Yeah, so. I just remember as a kid just being absolutely fascinated on all the other little robotos, as I call them. To me, they were all roboto. And I thought, oh, man, I'd like that one that says 9. I'd like to get this one here. I always thought they looked so cool. So, yeah, it definitely dazzled my eyes as a kid and, you know, sucked me in. But, yeah, it's a fun read. So if you've never read it, you know, I'm sure you can find this. You usually can find all these books on eBay, usually really dirt cheap most of the time for these Golden Book hardcover book, so you can find it there. But before we wrap it up, Tyler, if you got any recommendations, anything we want to say, and then I'll give a shout out at the end to everybody in the chat room who joined us, which we always love and appreciate you being here. And I try to name drop every one of you. I apologize if I didn't get to every comment, but yeah, we got going nuts earlier, I think we got a little too riled up, but that's good. It's healthy. Like I said, nothing wrong with, you know, a little healthy discussion, whether you like something or you don't like something, but just let your voices be heard.
Let's see. Oh, yes. And I want to thank everybody who tuned into the chat room, who joined us live. And I want to thank everybody who listens to this, you know, after we record this as well. I want to say, you know, go to He-Man Smells Trouble. If you've never seen the book, that's available to read the entire book for free. You can go there and see exactly what we're talking about right now. I'm going to do another little trivia here. Give away another Leech mini comic here. So if you can tell me, I'm trying to think how to word this so it's not too easy. Where is King Randor, Man-at-Arms, and Prince Adam going on their royal tour in the episode Prince Adam No More? And if you post your answer on the Fans of Power Facebook page correctly, and you have to post it there. Don't send it to me and don't send it to Joe. Post it on the Fans of Power Facebook page. And the question is, again, on the King Randor's royal tour, where is the first stop that Man-at-Arms, Prince Adam, and King Randor are going in the attack track before they're ambushed by Beastman and the Shadow Beasts? in the episode Prince Adam No More. So if you don't know, it's going to require you to put on that episode and sit and watch it. So, it's probably a little too easy since I'm telling you where to go. But I guess it just depends on how fast people tune in and watch that episode. So
I'm sure you'll get a quick response real quick in the chat room. Kimmy Kraft said, I have a question. When do you guys go live? Well, we always start the show at 9 p.m. Eastern time, of course, here every Sunday. So we're still live. There's about a 20-second delay between when we say something and, there's a 20-second delay. So in case you ever wonder, when we're talking, it comes about 20 seconds later. So that's that. And also, Delvis78 said he is the answer. It's Vegas is where they're going. Not sure if that's it, Delvis, but hey, what the heck? You can give it a shot.
Not quite. Not Vegas.
All right. So, okay. Well, again, thank you everybody in the chat room for joining us. We really appreciate it. Of course, hope you'll be here next week and we'll have more topics, different discussions, just like always. And let me tell everybody where you guys can go. You can go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
I know what this is. This is an espresso machine.
Huh. Oh, wait, that was that's from the 87 movie. Oh, God, did I fail? Wait a second. I thought that was when they went in. Oh, here we go. See, hey, guys, for people that are new to this, to be and watching this live, I fail all the time. Tyler give a quote, and I always have fun trying to answer it. Not that I have to, but I like trying to. And I usually fail most of the time.
Even movies that Joe knows better than I do, Joe will still fail.
I do. I'm horrible when it comes to lines. It's an God damn it, I should know. Is this a comedy? What is this? It's a...
Oh, it's an action movie.
It's an espresso machine. Damn. I don't... Ghost Freak, thanks for joining us. You're super late. We're just ending the show, but thanks for coming in at the last second. could you give me a hint? I gotta get a hint.
It stars Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It's an espresso machine. It's not Last Action Hero. No, it's not Last Action Hero.
No.
What the hell? I don't know what it is. Oh my God. I have no clue. What is it?
True Lies.
Oh, okay. You know what's weird? You're going to hate me for this. I have never sat down and watched True Lies all the way from beginning to end. I've always on TV caught part of the beginning, part of the end. I have never watched that whole movie, and that should be shame on me for it, but I've never watched all of True Lies. Guess it's something I'm going to have to do.
Well, you know we'll have to cover that on Beyond Retro now that you've said that.
Which is our other podcast we do on Friday nights. We do it around 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And that's our other show where we talk about all things 80s, 90s, sometimes modern stuff. But we talk about everything called Beyond Retro. So that's our other podcast for everybody who's listening and watching us live. You can always catch that show. So, all right. Well, again, thanks everybody for joining us. And we'll catch you guys next week.
All right. Next week. Later. Thank you.